from the twisted realm of science and the darkest pits of reason comes chilling tales of godlessness. Bear witness to the unfathomable terror that is The Good Atheist.
All right, welcome to the GoodAtheist.net podcast. I am your host, Jacob Forte.
And I am your co-host, Ryan Harkless.
Sorry, I had that. Oh, well, that's nice. I like that sound effect.
A little bit of a frog in my throat.
You're gonna edit that out, or are we going to have to include it?
Yeah, no, it's going in there.
Oh. All right, well, today we're going to talk a little bit about heaven. That place, apparently, in the sky where you go when you die.
Is it missing an angel?
It's missing me.
I think it's missing many angels because it is a place that does not exist.
Well, you know, I don't know if you saw the little video I put, link I put on my website for Ask an Expert What Heaven's Like.
It was a pretty interesting video, I must say.
You know, I don't even know really where it came from. First, when I saw it, I thought it was a joke. Now, I wanted to embed the video on my site, but as it turns out, on YouTube, they disallowed anyone from actually
embedding it.
I don't even know why. Maybe like the guy who actually made the video be like, you're disrespectful.
No, here's how it works is with YouTube, if you upload content that you want exclusively embedded onto your site, you can set it to only you as your login can put it on your site.
Oh.
It's a really good way to keep other people from putting it on their own website and basically ripping you off.
All right, well, that makes sense, except for probably the guy who posted up, it's not his video, so...
Well, I'm sure it's some, like, if that means to message the guy who put it up there, and he'd probably be able to tell you more about it.
Well, everybody can click the link. I mean, I don't need to have it embedded anyway, so it doesn't matter.
You run the site, so you should find out, because this guy might be like, he might be the deep throat of crazy religious
maybe
videos.
He has all of these old videos. He collects them like some maniac.
Oh, like some maniac who records a 30-minute podcast.
You have to beep that. We're not on your podcast where we're allowed that. That's explicit. We're not allowed it on my podcast. I want a little bit of credibility here.
A little bit of class.
A little bit of class. Last time, we didn't edit you out, but you said a bad word. I'm not going to say it now.
You said the only bad word.
No, actually, you said it last time, but I'm not going to get into that. Anyways, I recommend before you go on, if you haven't seen the video, press the pause button on your
MP3 player of your choice.
This is the beauty of non-live radio. Mm-hmm. And then go see the video because we're going to talk about it. I don't want anybody to be confused. All right. So with that said, welcome back. And now the video itself, the first bold claim, if that's even the word that surmises
Wait a second. I got to stop you here for a second.
All right. Okay, fine.
Are we talking about the video from the 70s with that guy and the midget?
Absolutely.
I wanted to make sure we weren't moving on to the evolution one.
We'll get to that later.
I apologize. I will not question your leadership of this show again.
You know, I could have sworn...
Mute me!
He's trying to take over the show here. Well, maybe I'm the only one with a number one show. Maybe you're upset about that, huh?
We'll see what happens down the road.
Yeah, all right. Anyways, so in the video, the first bold claim, if you can even describe it as bold, because I think it's just far too tame a word for bold, our expert decides that he's going to explain this relative size of heaven. Okay, so, all right, where he gets the number, I'll never know, but apparently heaven is about 7 million times bigger than New York City.
Well, he did explain. He broke it down. He said it like this. Taking a look at the height of the buildings in New York... And he multiplied, he basically said, heaven is this many times greater, so it must be this many times higher. And then the width of it and the length of it and all of that.
Well, the volume, I guess.
Yeah, well, he was saying, like, heaven, like, basically he looked at the tallness of it, and then he looked at the width of it, and he cubified the mathematical equation in order to expand it. And he was like, there you go. So he actually had, it was like 3.5 million times 2 equals 7 million. There you go. So I bet it was written out on a blackboard, I'm sure. He worked it all out.
I'm sure it had one of those crazy things where, you know, like in his formula, there was a little symbol for omega and alpha in his formula. Anyways, but that's not the first bold claim. I mean, there's a number of them. Like, for instance, did you know, Ryan? Did you know that we all get mansions in heaven? Did you know that?
Yeah.
All mansions. That's an exciting prospect, actually.
I don't know. If everybody had their own mansions, it seems like there'd be a lot of empty space and a lot of lonely people.
Well, it's only 7 million times bigger. I mean, I'm assuming I'm getting a 20-bedroom mansion here.
I wonder if we all get cars or if there's some kind of mass transport or something like that.
Well, he said later on that we all walk. Why can't I fly? I don't know. I want to do something cooler than walk. Screw walking.
We all walk? That's what he said?
Well, okay. At the later part, there's a dwarf who comes in. She's about 32 inches tall. She's 52 years old, and she sounds like Alvin the Chipmunk. And she suddenly starts singing this creepy little song about how when she gets to heaven, her body's going to be all good and she's going to be walking. And I'm like, you don't need to walk. Fly.
Yeah, I mean, they all have wings.
Yeah, they have these really cheap plastic wings.
But I'll tell you the truth. I kind of hesitate to, you know, look back and make fun of these people who you know, at the time, that was really big, you know, probably cutting edge, and it seemed, you know, it's
a big... They had advanced little graphics, too. Well, not computer graphics, but...
Well, it was some kind of computerized...
No, it wasn't computerized. You know what it was? You remember Monty Python?
Yeah.
Like those little text thing that was cut out of pictures?
Yeah,
that's what that was.
Oh, well, it was still kind of cutting edge at the time. And like, I mean, it would be kind of like going back and making fun of the original TV pioneers where they just... sit in front of the camera and talk into a microphone like they're on the radio. And so it's like, you know, you can fault these guys for, you know, their mathematical issues and so forth, but just like the style of the video, that was the 70s, man. If you were selling cars or selling Jesus or doing pornography or anything else in the 70s, it all looked that bad.
Buddy, I saw movies from the 70s and the hosts were not robots. Did you see how he walked? Be like, in heaven, you will see.
But it was the 70s, man. Everybody, that old guy, he probably had polio 7 times.
Okay, all right. That's probably true. the other... Well, you know actually where the whole mansion's from, like, comes from, right? Mm-hmm. It actually is a passage in the Bible where Jesus says, "In my Father's house there are many mansions." Which seems kind of weird because you're like, well, if it's his house, why are there mansions? But... I won't get into the rhetoric.
You're supposed to take everything literally except for that. Except for the first part of that statement, and then you can say...
I like the idea of a mansion inside another bigger mansion. Like, in my house, there's a mansion. I'm like, that's a big house.
Air conditioning inside and outside.
No, you don't need air conditioning. It's 70 degrees in heaven all the time.
But what if you want a hot day or a cool day or like to slide in snow? Or I guess that's just what heathen hell lovers do. This is the thing for me that I don't like about heaven is that if I went to heaven...
I'd be bored.
Well, it's not just bored. It's just that there's a lot of evil things that I like to do.
I get a lot of fun out of torturing small animals.
Oh, no, it doesn't go to the point of torture, but I mean, there's all sorts of fun things that I do that I know that religious people don't like. And obviously, if there was a God, I imagine God would be okay with the majority of the things that I do. But I imagine there's quite a few things that'd be like, I don't think so, Ryan. And I'd just be like, man, this place sucks.
Okay, here's a question. Mm. Are you allowed to fornicate with as many people as you want in heaven?
See, this is what I'm talking about.
This is what I'm talking about. Like, this would be the first thing that I would do, because you got an eternity, which means, well, you're always going to be there. So I'm figuring I'm going to mess around.
I asked a Mormon that exact question, and they ran away.
You know, I think that for every young guy below the age of 30, that's his first question.
Yeah.
How many girls can I have sex with in heaven?
And you know what?
What if I have a wife or girlfriend when I die, but I want to have sex with a bunch of people?
But shouldn't it be cool with that? This is where Islam got it right.
70 virgins.
No, people. Is it like 99 or something?
I know.
They specifically say, like, this is the number you get. And, you know, you give them credit to them for that.
But, no, what's hilarious about that, actually, is that is a mistranslation.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be something about, like, grapes or... I don't know. It's the same thing that from ancient Greek to Latin, mm-hmm. young maiden translates to young virgin. Oops! Well, that changes a little mythology there, don't you think?
So they're saying you won't get virgins, you'll get maidens?
No, what I mean is the Virgin Mary. Mm-hmm. In ancient Greek,
it was the Maiden Mary,
but translated from Greek to Latin, it becomes the Virgin, and all of a sudden, that kind of changes the whole aspect of it.
Yeah, everything else like that.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is that, like, the same happened in the Muslim religion. So, you know, you'll be able to drink fermented fruit juice, which is apparently their...
So you're allowed to get drunk.
Well, it didn't happen, but I guess the drunk thing turned into virgins.
But you know what?
I'd rather virgins than... No, wait. No. I'd rather get drunk.
Between, yeah, if you had women, lots of women, but you couldn't get drunk.
How am I supposed to get all excited?
I'll tell you what, between, you know, heaven just sounds a lot like living with my parents again. So,
Dad's always watching you, telling you what you can't do. Be like,
you can't watch that, right?
Ah, damn it.
Yeah, but, you know.
You so, damn it, that's what I'm saying.
If I was going to go somewhere, I'd say purgatory sounds pretty decent. Because it's full of people who aren't all hoity-toity. You know, they weren't quite good enough to get into heaven. So they go to purgatory.
I got bad news for you, man. They eliminated limbo.
They got rid of purgatory.
Yeah. Because apparently...
When?
Recently. But
like the 70s?
No. I'm talking a few months ago.
A few months ago.
Yeah. The Vatican convened and they had to... Because here's the big problem. They were losing a lot of converts in Africa because unbaptized babies are dying due to either, you know, miscarriages or other travesties.
Yeah.
And because they don't want people to wear a piece of rubber on their penises, they'd rather just rearrange their entire mythology. So, unfortunately, it's now kind of like, you know...
Oh, they were saying before that if you use a condom, you go to purgatory?
No. They were saying that unbaptized babies would end up in purgatory.
Uh-huh.
Or, well, limbo.
Yeah.
So, you know, I guess a lot of potential Christians weren't really happy about that.
So they,
my
they,
dead
they
baby.
Sweet, they sweetened... They, might,
they obliterated a cosmological region. So that they can
so
increase
fit,
converts.
So it would fit better into their...
I think they should just, you know, buy a little less gold plating and give vaccinations to their potential converts. Mm-hmm. You want to become a Christian? Here's a bunch of vaccinations.
No, I mean, this is basically what a lot of these places do. There were stories about missionaries who would come and basically were saying, you know, convert and we'll take care of your village
and we'll give you food.
Yeah, so it's the same thing. I mean, vaccinations is kind of a step up. I bet you anything, there's tons of... tribes out in Africa
still
that don't want anything to do with vaccinations because they still consider it like evil or whatever else. Like you know, they might say on the surface that they're all about God and they'll pay lip service and, you know, like go to church every Sunday, but, you know, deep down they're still like, that is deep voodoo you want to put in my veins.
You know, that's actually an interesting question. If you really took the numbers, if you looked at the numbers of how many, say, Catholics there are, or Christians, well, I'll just say Christians
in Africa.
Well, anywhere else. I mean, you got to wonder how many of these people are actually just kind of like, you know... Going with the flow, saying like, yeah, I am. Please feed me.
Or, no, but you know, this is the trick. Because it might not work with the initial generation, but the kids of those generations, the one that go to school with the missionaries teaching and everything else like that, it's indoctrination is what it is.
Well, you need at least a generation or two in order for it to catch on. But at the same time, you need way more than just sort of one institution. I mean... Look at me as a classic example. I went to a Catholic elementary school. It's called Pope Memorial. If I need to tell you more about the name, I don't think you're smart enough for me to continue to have you as a guest host. Aww. Anyways, every morning they'd have you say the prayer, Our Father who art in heaven, blah, 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 blah. Of course, it was rote memorization. I didn't really care about the words. Although I still kind of know them, which is kind of creepy to me.
Be that name, the kingdom come.
Yeah. You know what I'm talking about then.
Yeah.
And, you know, once in a while, once a week, a serious discussion, classwork on, you know, the whole Bible story. But because I didn't have any of those other tertiary elements teaching me or teaching, I say that with quotation marks here, but teaching me about religion, never really sunk in because you need support from different elements. You need your parents that are, you know, supportive of that idea. You need institutions like your educational institutions. You need the church there. You need all of these different institutions working in conjunction in order for it to really stick. Because our brain will reject such an idea. We'll be like, this doesn't make sense. And that's what I did. Somebody's telling me like, oh, he walked on water. I'm like, that doesn't make sense. I mean. Does he have a superpower? Is he immune to water? Is he like an Aquaman? And they're
David
like,
Copperfield did it.
I think David Copperfield is a god.
He did go through the Great Wall of China.
I know. That was pretty sweet.
Yeah.
Yeah? When he made the Statue of Liberty disappear?
He made the Statue of Liberty disappear and he brought the Titanic back from the
no.
The Bermuda Triangle.
It's not in the Bermuda Triangle.
Well, I guess it wasn't because
but I like that. Nice. Nicely done. Anyways, so that was the video. That's a little bit of humor. We're going to deal with something a little bit more serious. And I'm going to start with the tirade.
Mind. About evolution.
No, actually, just about creationists in general. And I want to say this. I want to say a thank you to creationists. I know this is going to sound weird, but did you ever get one of those days where you kind of wake up and you wonder, what the hell am I doing? What's the point of waking up? Am I doing the right thing? You ever have one of those mornings?
Yeah, sometimes.
Okay, well, anytime I have one of those mornings, I just need to pop over a video of some creationist saying something that evolution is bogus, and you know what? I'm revitalized. I feel as though I really do have a purpose. Mm. I mean, it's like that. You ever hear that thing where this criminal is? It's like a story, but this criminal goes over to this judge and said, "If I didn't exist, you didn't exist.
You don't exist."
Yeah. It's kind of the same way with me. I'm like, if these creationists didn't exist, I mean, maybe I would be totally useless. I would have a radio show about sprockets. I don't know.
Sprocket Hour.
Welcome to Sprocket Hour. There's a metal filament and an impurity in some of the sprockets. Just to let you know out there, people.
Don't put more than 1,800 pounds of torque per square inch on those suckers or they're going to break.
I would feel a little useless, but having watched a recent video, it's a documentary. Whew.
This is
on creation versus, it's called Creation versus Evolution. Wow. You saw it. What do you think?
Well, I'm just, again, this is going back to something I think I said in a bit of a different way, but I'm just amazed that this is the battleground. This is the battleground between the religious and the atheists. And it's like, there's evolution is a big battle, and abortion is a big battle, and those are like two of the big main battles where everybody's clashing. And I just don't get why there's so much emphasis placed on this topic, and why they're so adamant on it, and why there's so much time spent on it, and watching the video, they're just trying so hard to just tear down the theory of evolution.
It is. I mean, you're right. It is mind-boggling. You wonder why are you spending so much effort, and for so little payoff. I mean, how much can you disprove a theory that is essentially so solid as evolution, right? How much time? It'd be like you saying, you know what, the rest of my life, I want to disprove gravity.
No, to me, it's like, why, if they took all of the effort and time they spent battling non-religious people or trying to push through legislation that supported their views, and rather use that energy to push forward the positive aspects of religion, the charity, the kindness, the outreach,
the community aspect.
And I'm not saying it's like, you know, it's so they can win the fight. I'm saying it from an actual point of view of this is the whole point.
Well, you, what you're saying is essentially talk about what you're good at. Don't talk about what you suck at.
Well, I just don't understand the whole battle aspect of it. It's like they're spending so much time arguing this point that they're losing the battle just for the fact that they've now switched their focus from doing positive things to just fighting this stupid battle.
Well, you have to, you know, a lot of people are wondering, why is there a rebirth? And this is, in fact, a rebirth of atheism, because if you look at there were a number of atheist movements. One of the really first major one actually happened in France during the French Revolution. They were called Jacobins, and that's a little ironic considering my name is Jacob, but let's not make any correlations here. It's just a name.
Non-scientific correlation, Jacob.
Non-scientific.
Tut, tut, tut.
You're not Jacobins for listening to this show, but the Jacobins were essentially a group of, well, they classified themselves as both atheists and ultra-rationalists. And really, the reason that this movement failed is essentially they utilized the confusion and violence of the French Revolution to eliminate, kill individuals that were religious. I mean, they would persecute priests or anybody that was religious and essentially executed them because they didn't believe what they believed. That's kind of a little unfortunate, or a lot unfortunate, because this has perpetuated the idea that atheists are hell-bent on essentially destroying everyone's good time and saying, like, oh, you need to believe what we believe or you're stupid.
This was French Revolution.
What year is the French Revolution?
Yeah.
That's about, 1779, I believe, is the French
Revolution. I guess at that point there was already a pretty good separation of church and state to a decent degree. They weren't burning anybody still back then, right?
They still were.
So, I mean,
the Inquisition lasted about 500 years.
You say it's unfortunate that they were so violent towards religious people and everything like that, but I think at that point, but it's like when it's at a point like that where it already is a war, it's just a war that atheists aren't fighting, or they're just getting burned over.
Well, it's movement. Counter movement,
and I really have to wonder if maybe this is extremist Islamic people already feel is the same idea, that they feel justified because they do feel oppressed and they do feel like the world is really just out to suck all of the oil out of their country and leave them.
Fundamentalists are not at battle with atheists. Fundamentalist Muslims are at battle with other Muslims.
Mm.
That's what people have to understand. I mean, they're not fighting atheists. I mean, they hate them, but they're not the primary target. The primary target is any other Muslim that does not believe what they believe. Hmm. And
you're saying that there's no Muslims that... I'm not going to go into that whole rhetoric of, oh, they hate our way of life, but basically they hate Western culture.
Well, they view Western culture as being sort of like, obviously they're having that materialistic atheism.
Hmm.
But, right now fundamentalists are more interested in consolidating the rest of Islam to really believe what they believe. Even before they want to destroy our society, they want to see the Islamification of the world.
And
for that to happen, it has to be their version of, what the Muslim religion is supposed to be like. So this is the reason why there is so much conflict in the Middle East. It's not because, the sectarian world is fighting, the secular world. It's just the sectarian world is fighting within itself for control over their particular ideologies. But we're going off on a tangent here. I wanted to talk specifically about the video that I watched about these creationists. Now, I mentioned that I was thankful of them, but that's on a very specific thing, to give me a purpose. With that said, there's a lot to say about the particular videos. Not that, you don't even need to watch them, because I will explain to you through this dialogue, what exactly their tactics and their techniques are. And I know that some people are probably like, this issue is tired and we just need to drop it. But this is a serious issue. And, the level of sophistication of these videos is continuing to increase. I mean, at some point, they may be as sophisticated and, as high in production as a Nova documentary.
I've watched it, and my goal when I was watching it was I was going to take all of the points that they actually sounded pretty reasonable on, all of the questions that they raised, and I was going to kind of bring them up.
Ask an expert. They were going to ask me, right?
Well, it was basically they sold. I mean, even the hokey chick, the hokey woman, the hokey individual who was hosting the show, who basically was trying to sell everything, she really blew the credibility of it. She was just way too over the top. But a lot of the more in-depth scientific things, where they were talking to scientists, they were talking to all these other people, and they were saying, this theory here, this part here that they proved wasn't true, this is missing, that is that. They did a good job, I'll admit it.
They were picking and choosing, and they were getting people to be skeptical of the evidence, so they will pick and choose what they see as the biggest gaps.
And I guess this is what they had, is they had a whole bunch of scientists being skeptical about it. And they were saying these are evolutionists. They said, Charles, here's where Darwin refutes his own theory. Here's where the scientist doubts his own theory, and this and that.
Mm-hmm.
But it's interesting that they say, and this is, I guess, the difference between science and religion is that scientists, of course, by a good scientist, is always questioning
absolutely
what they believe in. They're always questioning everything because they're always looking for flaws to weed out improper truths and get rid of things. While they kept on saying over and over, the Bible was right, the Bible was right. And I'm saying the Bible never said anything about this. Like, people are reading into the Bible and making it fit whatever they want it to say.
Well, they're reading it into it as much as somebody is going to read into the predictions of Nostradamus.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like one of the big things that they say, well, for instance, the Bible predicts the Big Bang. It said, like, in the beginning there was light.
Mm.
Well, you know, Big Bang is going to produce a lot of light. Okay, well, you know, that's really reaching here. I mean, this is... Sure, I mean, it's a great coincidence. I'm sure it works in their favor, but it's not the only one.
You know what? If the beginning of the Bible said, in the beginning there was darkness, then they would say that meant space.
Or in the beginning there was adventure. They'd use... I don't know.
That sounds like a movie. The beginning.
There was adventure. And they'd be like, adventure means the potential for endothermic reactions.
I don't know. There's always something.
It doesn't matter. I mean, like, as long as you keep a text as broad as possible, anybody can read into it.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make a prediction saying, like, soon nation will rise against nation. I'll probably be right.
Yeah.
I mean, I should be rewarded now. I'm a prophet, buddy. But the point is, like, okay, here's one of the major things, and you don't know this because you don't really follow it, but one of the big things that they did, for instance, was they pointed out some of the flaws and some of the really bad science that was done. And one of the classic examples they use is the peppered moth. And, mm-hmm. and you saw this, right?
Yeah.
Now, seeing that, what did you think? Did you think that they were lying about that? Did you think that they were making things up? What do you think about it, knowing nothing about the peppered moth?
Well, honestly, I thought, I'm like, well, this disproves the peppered moth experiment, but, I mean, there's tons of experiments on every end and level that are completely bogus. I was actually reading something similar, where there was a company that was releasing a perpetual motion machine,
okay.
A perpetual energy thing.
One of those
and
again.
once again, the religious came out when this machine failed and said, see ha, proof, somehow, that... Science is all... I'm like, no, I mean, the fact that experiments are proven as fakes or that data is proven wrong, that's a scientific process. It wasn't religion that told us the peppered moth experiment was fake. It was the fact that other scientists uncovered and revealed it.
Absolutely.
And discounted the peppered moth.
Exactly.
It went out the window, but they didn't throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, they certainly didn't. And that's the whole thing. I mean, they are right in criticizing the experiments behind the peppered moth. Yes, it was staged. It was a bad experiment, but the people that uncovered it weren't creationists. They were other scientists. They said, you know what? The peppered moth doesn't lie on trees. This doesn't have anything to do with the Industrial Revolution changing the pattern of trees and therefore changing the color pattern of these moths.
Mm-hmm.
So the guys had to come out and say, all right, we staged the pictures. And you know, there are incentives for scientists to be fraudulent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if you ever heard of something called the Piltdown Man. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah. No, I saw the special on that.
Right. Essentially, the Piltdown Man was, in Great Britain, they perpetuated a fraud. There's a big... No one has really uncovered who perpetuated, but essentially the fraud was this. They uncovered bones that seemed to indicate a very, the missing link between man and, I guess, primitive humanoids. But what they later found out was that it was a chimpanzee jaw that had been
filed down,
painted, and looked to be aged. And all the data had been faked. And this, obviously, the Piltdown Man is still a common example used by creationists of saying, look, this is an example of science trying to defraud you. But this is not an example of science doing it. It's an example of certain individuals within the scientific community doing it. And these guys don't speak for everybody. They don't suddenly say, well, all of science is united behind the Piltdown Man.
Just like you can't say that all of the religious world is behind these evangelicals or these televangelists.
Well, just like you can't say
that... molesting people or doing meth or having sex with their prostitutes.
or just say that every Muslim person person is a terrorist. I mean, yeah. that would be, that's that level of saying, well, just because there's a few individuals that do it, that, mm-hmm. therefore every individual that, you know, believes in the same thing does it. Yeah. And that's not true. And at the same time, it's the very individuals that are involved in it that expose these myths, because, you know, at the time, even British scientists who are really thrilled at the fact that, you know, the origin of man seemed to point to their own little island, had to admit that no, life, or at least human evolution, didn't really take off in Britain. Probably a really sad thing for patriotic scientists, but at the end of the day, they're interested more in truth than they are in their, you know, nationality or any other denominations. For them, or for any good scientist, the truth really is the most important thing, and that's kind of the sad thing that is lost on a lot of these creations. The truth is not the most important thing for them. What the most important thing is that their religion essentially dominates and everyone believes what they believe. Mm-hmm. And you just gotta wrap your head around it, saying like, what's going on here? Why? Fine, believe what you want to believe in. That's fine. Mm-hmm. But as soon as you cross that line of saying, well, I want other people to believe in it, all right, well, show me the P word. Show me the proof. Mm-hmm. Show me the evidence. And if you try to manipulate that evidence so that people believe what you believe, that's where guys like me step in and call you on everything that you're going to say. Everything. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, you didn't get to watch all the video because it's quite lengthy, and it is very frustrating to watch. It took me 4 days to watch this thing. I had to stop it every 20 minutes. I just want to punch a pillow. Like, you're just like, why did you say that? Why? Oh, yeah. Well.
You're getting actually pretty riled up right now.
I am a little riled up. I'm a passionate guy, buddy. Mm-hmm. But no, really, when they stop making any sense, when they start making claims and saying, you know, evolution is a fairy tale. And as soon as they start saying that, I mean, I get a little riled up.
Well, it's I got to admit, it is a little bit funny. This is my, and again, I think we said it a little bit before, is the idea that they're always saying science is wrong, but the Bible was right. And that's what really bugs me, is the idea that they're saying the Bible is right, the Bible has never changed, the Bible is never wrong. And I'm like, and they're like, there's countless times where we've proven that things in the Bible happen scientifically, and it's ridiculous.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, their first claim that the Bible has never changed, which one? There have been many different types of Bibles. I mean, there's the ancient Greek ones. The Bible that they read is the King James Bible. Mm-hmm. And the King James Bible only came about after the invention of the printing press. Before then, it was illegal for any individual to own a Bible. It was a strictly mandated thing. And even the Bible that we have now, on which the King James Bible translation is based, mm-hmm. it was developed around, it was done during the time of Constantinople, who made Christianity official in the Roman Empire, and that was about 325 A.D., and it was just a bunch of, you know, all the clergymen of Christianity, because it was still kind of all out there, and there were a bunch of, you know, gospels and writings, and they said, okay, well, we need to put this all together, and it needs to make sense. And that's what the first Council of Nicaea, because there was actually two.
Yeah.
The first Council of Nicaea came together and established what is essentially the Bible now. But that had already, like, Christianity had already been developing for 400 years. Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of writing from different people. There was, like, you know, the Dead Sea Scrolls. There is the all the Gospels of the various other individuals, like Judas has a Gospel. Thomas has a Gospel. Even, apparently, Mary Magdalene has a Gospel. And these were all excluded from the Bible.
Just a quick question on the side here. All of those Gospels that didn't make the cut,
mm-hmm.
are you able to find those, like, on the internet and check out what they say?
I've never been able to find them, no. They are very closely guarded.
So you think we'd have to break into the Vatican basement?
I don't want to break into that place. They got those Swiss guards with those fruity pants.
They took out that guy that tried to jump on the Popemobile pretty effectively.
Can't touch this. I mean, they got those parachute pants. It's crazy.
You know, MC Hammer should be suing them.
Actually, they should be suing MC Hammer.
Yes.
But he's now a minister, so I guess they're on the same team. They're under lock and key, but one of the main reasons is because the Council of Nicaea was established to eliminate many of the more fantastical elements of these Gospels. Like, for instance, they're apparently, I haven't read this because they keep it under lock and key, but I think the Gospel of Thomas describes Jesus during his childhood as being very mischievous and turning people into goats and, you know, making wood levitate. For his father to be able to, because he was a carpenter, right?
Yeah.
So they decided, no, this is too fantastic. We're going to keep
a bit too Greek.
Well, exactly. I mean, it emulates a lot of parts of Greek mythology because it was heavily influenced by them. And they were like, no, this is no good. We want to focus more on the moralistic elements of it. And, you know, let's keep the parts of Jesus' life that are just kind of a little too fruity out of there.
Yeah.
So you have to wonder, you know, they say that 30 years of Jesus' life is missing, but what kind of documentation do they have potentially describing, quote-unquote, describing his life, that period. And I'm sure it's some kind of crazy Harry Potter-like magic going on there. Levitidus, Esperitus, I don't know.
Oh, that's just Absurdium Magicus.
But no, again, like I said, I mean, the Bible has gone through a lot of changes. I mean, and besides, through every translation, even before the Gutenberg press, you don't think that there were some, you know, someone adding their little tidbit or whatever? I mean, be serious.
Yeah.
And before the King James Bible, there were a number of individuals that tried to make translations, and guess what happened to them? They were executed.
Well, this is the thing. It's like, even if you believe in the idea that the Bible is the Word of God and should be taken literally because it is that, human error. You play telephone when you're in kindergarten, you realize how stupid we are.
Oh yeah, like it only takes like 4 or 5 to get the message completely and utterly wrong.
Yeah.
Be like, you start with the refrigerator needs ketchup, and you end with
unicorns ride across the sky.
Exactly, something as ridiculous as that. So,
and you know what, since I like my version better, I'm gonna say that's the official one, and we'll just forget everything about ketchup and fridges and I will call it Christianity.
There you go. It's all about unicorns. And they do have unicorns in the Bible, so...
No way.
Yeah, that's where that comes from.
Really?
Yeah.
Awesome.
The idea of unicorns is a biblical thing. They talk about unicorns in the Bible.
Was Jesus about unicorns?
No.
Is it more Old Testament?
It's Old Testament.
Hmm.
Giants, unicorns, dragons, that's all Old Testament stuff.
I don't know. I mean, that sounds cool, but...
It sounds like a cool world.
You have less chance of being smote by God in the New Testament. Until the end. Never mind. Old Testament.
I want to live in the New Testament up until the Revelation.
Yeah, exactly.
At that point,
yeah.
I don't want to be there for, you know, the war and all that kind of stuff. No.
Yeah, I'll tell you what. I am all about Jesus. Like, as far as everything goes, as far as religion and I say Jesus is where it's at. Because, I mean, obviously, you said there's tons of passages where Jesus is like, you know, you're going down.
You're going down. Be like, the way through heaven is through me. I'm like... Is that a little gay?
No, but I mean, compared to the rest of it all, I'd say if there's one thing that people want to take from the Bible and be all about, I'd say Jesus is probably the best thing that you can do, because there's those other, you know, the groups, the Davidians and everything else that are all about revelations, and that's bad news. And that is really bad news.
That
I mean,
is
just look at the Old Testament people, man. Oh, they're hardcore. They're still out in the fields churning butter for a living.
Old Testament guys are hardcore. The Revelation guys are hardcore. Everyone who was in the middle is probably the public that's in the middle in terms of they're moderates. They're like, well, you know, this guy was about love and peace and turn the other cheek.
But then you got the hardcore Jesus people who are just as crazy. And this is what we can do. This is what we can talk about next week. Promise me we'll talk about this next week.
I promise. Tomb.
Empty tomb.
Empty tomb.
That we'll talk about that Jesus Camp movie.
Well, we'll talk about it, and actually, maybe next radio show we can talk about Jesus, and we can cover the fact of asking the question of whether or not if Jesus lived today, would he be considered moral, immoral, or amoral? Maybe that's going to be the next one, because that's pretty controversial.
Man, you are nothing but a talking chattery head of standard atheist points. That's such a typical atheist thing to talk about.
Oh, give me a break. I mean, first of all, if you're a Christian, you're going to talk about the guy, you have to, you know, put him up to modern day scrutiny.
That's not the point of Jesus Christ.
Oh, tell me what the point is.
It's all about loves and hugs and unicorns.
Loves. All right, with that, we'll end the show because I don't think you can get better than loves and unicorns and dragons. And
keep that in your pocket. Keep it for your dreams, baby.
And on a very strange note, unicorns, love, and magic. I mean, this is all Harry Potter stuff, so do yourself a favor if you want a history lesson. Go see Harry Potter.
Indeed.
And then you can enjoy all of those fantastic little elements. Anyways, I'm Jacob Forte from thegoodatheist.net, and as always,
I'm Ryan Harkness from fightlinger.com.